Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I can never forgive Thompson and Venables for the horrendous, calculated, cold-blooded murder of James. That's a quote from James Bulger's mother, Denise Fergus. Today's case is one of the most horrific cases we have covered to date. It deals with death, assault, and children. A young 2-year-old boy was lured away from his mother, and his life was tragically and maliciously taken. This is the story of James Bulger. My name's Ben.
And I'm Nicole, and you're listening to Wicked and Grim,
a true crime podcast.
Birthday, Ben.
Thank you. Big old 36 years old around the sun today.
Mm-hmm.
Celebrating it right.
You feeling it?
Yeah, I woke up with a really sore back this morning. Had to stretch it out. Had a good hot shower to help relax those muscles. Got moving. Felt a little better as the day went on. And it's probably going to repeat itself tomorrow because that's just what happens as you age.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're also on a road trip and I feel like my body just can't do road trips anymore. My back is just effed.
Fair enough. We've been sitting in the car for at least 6 hours a day.
At least. I mean, I feel like, I don't know, there's got to be tips and tricks of how to deal with that better.
Oh, I think so. I'm pretty sure the answer is just yoga. And then the bed that we're sleeping on tonight in this hotel, like this hotel is phenomenal. It's basically just an apartment. But it's a bit of a firm mattress. Mm-hmm. And I'm a side sleeper, so I need a little bit more softer to kind of like conform to my curves of my body.
How are you going with that?
So,
oh boy.
Yeah, the firmer mattresses don't do so well for me. And yeah, as a result, my back was fucked this morning.
I actually had the best sleep, I think, in this bed last night.
Really?
Out of all the beds that we've slept in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, on this trip, not our own.
Gotcha.
There's nothing like your own bed.
Nothing like your own bed. There's no place like home, yeah. as Dorothy said from The Wizard of Oz, right?
Exactly.
We have some patrons to thank for signing up and supporting us behind the scenes, getting that exclusive content. They had a exclusive episode drop for the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And this week we have one who signed up, and that one amazing individual is Mackenzie.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Mackenzie, for heading over to Patreon.
Thank you, Mackenzie.
And supporting us. It means a lot.
It sure does.
Now, the murder of James Bulger.
Yeah.
This is a rough, rough case. And I'm warning everyone now, this deals with children, various forms of assault. It is heavy. It has been on our case for a long time to cover.
On our list, yeah.
What did I say?
On our case.
On our list. It has been a case on our list to cover for a long time. And now is the time. So here we are.
It's been on there a long time, but one we've been putting off because it's going to be a doozy. And I don't even know much about it.
It's one that it's up there with some of the worst cases we have ever covered. So you're going to walk away with a fairly heavy heart after this one.
Oh, boy. What a good way to end the vacation. Thank you, Ben.
Sorry. Well, are you ready to dive in? Oh, we should say, actually, since we are on a road trip right now, before we do dive in, our audio on this may sound a bit different because we are, like we already said, in a hotel room right now. We have our road trip podcasting gear with us. So it's a different microphone, different setup to try and muffle some of the echoes. We have the pillows from our bed built up around us at the moment to try and give us somewhat of a studio sound. So it might sound different, but we'll be right back to our regular sounding episodes
next week. Yeah.
So yeah. With that said, now are you ready to get into this episode?
Okay. Now or never. So let's do it.
Okay. Well, on the 16th of March in 1990 in Kirby, England, a baby boy named James Patrick Bulger entered the world. Bringing immense joy to his parents, Ralph and Denise, the new parents had previously experienced the heartache of losing a previous daughter who was stillborn. Now James was a beacon of hope and happiness for the growing family. James was a happy little boy who was blessed with bright blue eyes and a mop of light brown hair. He exuded a very cheerful demeanor, constantly bringing smiles and laughter to his parents' face. At 25 years old, Denise showered her son with constant affection, and she watched over him with extremely watchful eyes like a hawk. She had, unfortunately, with a stillborn birth before, lost one child at one point and was not prepared to be losing another.
Mm-hmm. That's really hard.
However, tragedy would lurk around the corner on what would seem like a routine trip to some shops just before James's third birthday.
Oh, gosh.
On the Friday afternoon, on the 12th of February in 1993, Denise took her son James for a shopping excursion at Bootle Strand Shopping Center. As the day went on, Denise stepped into A.R. Tim's butcher shop for her final errand of the day. And it was here that her attention was momentarily diverted away from her son James, who was at her side. Tragically, in this fleeting moment of distraction, it proved to be long enough for James to vanish into thin air. Panic quickly ensued as Denise realized that her son was no longer there, no longer by her side, and she couldn't find him. She quickly rushed outside the shop, frantically scanning the surroundings, hoping that she would see her son and the nightmare would end in a simple rush of panic and nothing more. Unfortunately, as the seconds ticked by, and no matter how hard she looked, she still could not find James anywhere.
Oh, gosh, that is just brutal, that feeling. I couldn't imagine the feeling.
I couldn't imagine either. And for her, reality began to sink in. It was her worst nightmare that was unfolding right before her eyes. Her son was gone.
Yeah, and he was not even 3 years old.
Yeah, just about to turn three.
Gosh.
With no sign of James, the authorities, who were summoned to the scene after they were after the shopping center security team as well. They were like, can you guys get out here? Help us. You know the layout of the land. Let's band together, see if we can find him.
Well, yeah, you would think he wouldn't be far, right? Like he's just
one would think, yeah.
Probably within the shopping center kind of thing.
So that's what they did. They focused on looking through the shopping center right away. And unfortunately, neither the authorities or the security team were able to locate James. With the investigation now beginning, Denise provided a detailed description of her son's attire at the time of the disappearance. He was wearing a blue jacket with a hood, silver tracksuit pants, and white trainer shoes. The description was immediately passed along to anyone who would listen, anyone in the surrounding area, be it authorities or be it public civilians, be it shop owners, anyone who would listen, who's around, the description was passed. The seconds Denise first felt in the moment of James's disappearance began turning into hours. And by 4 p.m., an officer involved in the search began consoling the absolutely distraught mother while the others continued the search. Finally, the first break in the investigation came when the authorities and security personnel tirelessly poured all through the collected CCTV footage from the shopping center. While going through the different angles from different cameras, covering several different shops or hallways, whatever it be, they eventually spotted James. He was seen leaving the butcher shop. In fact, only moments before Denise was seen exiting the butcher shop, frantically looking for him. And the footage captured a very heart-wrenching moment when Denise, you know, is exactly doing that, panicked, looking around, hoping to find her son.
Well, it's a complete nightmare for her.
Exactly. And she is oblivious to where he is. And in the cameras, it shows that he's venturing to the upper floor, trailing behind two older preteen boys, with her standing there on the floor, none the wiser.
Oh, okay. So was like heading back into the mall with these boys?
In the mall, but heading up to the second floor.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The grainy images from the CCTV revealed the last moment of James before disappearing with the two older boys. One of the boys was holding James's hand, leading him towards the exit. Their path directed towards Leeds Liverpool Canal.
Huh, okay.
It would be Sunday, February 14th, 1993, Valentine's Day. The day dawned with James now missing for two heart-wrenching days. Both police and James's family had exhausted every avenue of their desperate search efforts. Patrol cars had cruised the streets, their loudspeakers pleading for information, press conferences had been held, urging the two boys spotted in the Strahd shopping center to come forward, mm-hmm. and a relentless manhunt had scoured the nearby canals, which was where they were last headed, and the wastelands. However, any flicker of hope for a joyful reunion was about to be extinguished. A breathless young boy burst through the doors in Walton Lane Police Station with grim news. A body had been discovered on the railway tracks, a mere 150 yards from the station's rear entrance. What unfolded next was a horror that put a pit in the stomach of the entire nation. The police were confronted with the grim reality of a murder investigation, faced with the daunting task of tracking down two young boys involved in the chilling events, because right now they stood over the gruesome remains of the deceased two-year-old James Bulger.
No. Why? Why?
Well, I can't just spill it all right now. We got a story to tell here.
I'm aware of that, but what the actual fuck?
Yeah. His remains were in rough shape as well, which we will get into later. But being on the train tracks, he was run over by a train and his body was severed.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Okay. Brutal.
So following the horrible and tragic news of James's murder, emotions within the Liverpool community reached a boiling point. Along the bank, near where his body was discovered, an outpouring of grief took the form of hundreds of flowers being laid in tribute to the young life that was lost. Among them, chillingly, was a bouquet placed by someone who would actually later be identified as one of James's own murderers.
Ugh.
Yeah, kind of
disgusting.
Almost soiling the entire tribute itself, really, yeah. Right? But still, regardless of this dark piece finding its way in the memorial, the sea of flowers stood in James's name, which is kind of, we just covered a case on Patreon where an individual offered condolences to a family when he, in fact, was the one who did the killing.
Yeah.
So it's very similar in this instant that the perpetrator is the one doing this act of, quote, kindness, if you will, to the family who's lost a loved one.
Well, I mean, I think it's not uncommon for at funerals for investigators to go if the person who died was murdered, right? Because
yeah.
chances are they maybe knew their murderer or the murderer is there in attendance at the funeral,
exactly.
which is so beyond disturbing.
Yeah. So they're there for not only, of course, paying respect, but investigative purposes as well.
Yeah.
They could even be watching people's faces and their reaction to the memorial.
Yeah.
Like, why is that person not crying? Why is that person crying as much as they're crying? Like things like that, mm-hmm. looking for those cues.
Yeah.
So,
or who's here and why would they be here kind of thing. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Now, as the community grieved, the authorities were hard working at the case, trying to make any lead that they could to figure anything out. With only the grainy images from the CCTV cameras capturing James's abduction, the police were left with very little to do. Determined, though, to track down the two older boys seen leading him away from the shopping center, though, they began attempting to enhance the footage to hopefully, in any way, shape, or form, discern the two and come up with an identity. Thankfully, the community rallied behind the authorities and gave anything they could as far as information. You know, what they had seen or heard on, you know, anything, mm-hmm. basically. Whatever they could do to help make an arrest. Unfortunately, this turned out one instance on Tuesday, February 16th, due to information that was passed on to police, they made an arrest. But unfortunately, like I said, this turned out to be a false lead, and it was an innocent boy. Someone who had given some information, be it false or whether they mistook identity, whatever the situation, it was unfortunately an innocent individual. He was not one of the individuals seen in the footage. However, with the community so wound tight over this incident, and I mean, understandably so, and the witness, and there was witnesses who saw the arrest, people began to talk and draw on conclusions. So this is actually an innocent boy who is not involved whatsoever. But the community now sees this kid as someone who was arrested, and he must be the one who did something or is responsible.
So just being like spread like wildfire then.
It became a witch hunt of sort, with an angry public wanting to seek retribution for James. And the innocent boy, who is now set free from the police after being found innocent, had to leave his home with his family for fear of their own safety.
Okay, that is not okay though.
No, it's not. It's an unfortunate situation, and it's not something super important to the story, but I did want to keep it in here to drive home the importance of like the moral of this. It's a classic two rights don't make a wrong. If they stayed in their home, if they very well could have turned out to be two innocent young boys who could have lost their life in this story. But they fled for their own safety, and thankfully they remained safe. But
it's unreasonable that they
It's unreasonable.
Yes. I mean, it does make sense, but it doesn't make sense. And I'm almost kind of thinking too, the police maybe, you know, should have communicated something in a better way of sorts, because but what do they do, I guess?
Well, I mean, yeah, you can only hold someone for so long, right? They have no evidence to hold this kid. So they let him free. Then what do you do?
And people just took the rumor and ran, kind of thing.
Exactly. Even if you do a press conference, you can't have a press conference with cameras and news sources, like as someone is walking out the door. You got to get facts straight. You got to set stuff up. Like, it takes time.
Yeah, that's too bad, though.
Yeah. So, anyways, I wanted to drive that moral home, that the two wrongs thing don't make a right. So don't take, don't take these things into your own hands. You know, the law, generally speaking, anyways, not always, as we know in this show, but generally speaking, will at least do its best to try and make those rights. But anyways, I digress. So while this was all going on, a woman seemed to recognize the grainy figures from the footage that was released. And she recognized them as Robert Thompson and John Venables, known as two young troublemakers in the area. Now, a quick check of the school registry would actually provide a very solid alibi for the two, right? Like, if they're in school, their attendance is there, then how could they have been the ones at the mall, right? Unfortunately, this confirmed their absence from class that very same day when James had vanished.
Oh, boy.
They were not at school. So it was on Thursday, February 18th, that the police decided they needed to act quickly on this new information. Undercover officers in plain clothes and unmarked cars were dispatched to arrest both of the boys, because they learned from that first incident they wanted to keep this as quiet as possible.
Okay, they learned from that. That's good.
Yes.
That's something you can only ever hope for.
Yeah, so they wanted to keep it quieter than last time. What if it's a mistake? Even if it's not, you want to make sure that you deal with this properly and that it doesn't explode into something more.
Well, yeah, what's the saying? Innocent until proven guilty?
Exactly, 100%. So Robert Thompson was a 10-year-old boy. He was with his mom and lived with his mom and two younger brothers. Now, interestingly enough, which I mean, it may play some insight into Robert's upbringing and behavior, his four older brothers had all been taken into foster care. So he had lived with, you know, his two younger brothers, but he had four older ones. They don't live with him anymore. Foster care sort of situation, right?
Okay.
So might provide some insight. There's a lot of psychology stuff behind this case that people talk about, but we're not diving into that. But just a little tidbit for food for thought. So upon arrival for Robert Thompson's arrest, the police quickly noted the proximity of his house and just how close it was to the scene where James's body was found. Rather close. Now, John Venables was also 10 years old, and he came from a family with divorced parents since he was only 3 years old, when his parents would ultimately, that from then on, share joint custody of him and his two siblings. When police arrived to arrest him, he had appeared at the top of the staircase before the officers. They were immediately taken aback. Here he stood, staring down, you know, to the officers as they looked up to him, a possible killer. He was only 10 years old and was very unusually small and timid looking for his age. The police are making eye contact with what could be a murderer.
Yeah, which would not be what they normally are expecting.
Definitely
from
not.
From someone who did something like that.
This small child could potentially be responsible for this.
Yikes.
Yeah. In the officer's mind, though, it immediately became, because of this scene, this individual they're looking at, this, like I said already, child.
Yeah.
It became increasingly evident to them, basically, that this little 10-year-old boy that they were staring at, I mean, now in handcuffs and in their custody, couldn't possibly be the one responsible for what had happened to James. These two boys that they have in custody, how could they be responsible, mm-hmm. right?
Well, 10, yeah, 10 years old is very young.
Yeah. So even when they had these two in custody, they were actually still pressing for answers from the public and trying to get more information. They were certain that there must be two older boys out there that they've mistaken these two for, and that they're actually looking for other individuals. But still, they're doing their due diligence and they're looking into these two and where they were. And, you know, of course, what people had said or the tips or whatever, right? So
yeah, because you think just off the top of my head that you would be thinking they would be at least 14, like 15 or 16 or something, you know, but not 10.
Yeah. No, these aren't even teenagers.
Yeah.
They're not even 13. They're not even 12. They're not 11. They're 10. They've just entered double digit numbers.
Yeah. It's like a preteen.
Barely a preteen, really. Yeah. So while dismissing the boys as potential murderers, Intendant Albert Kirby was still eager to question both of them. He and every other single officer involved was convinced that they were looking, as I mentioned, for older teens. But still, they pressed forward. On Thursday, February 18th, the interview with the two boys began, the same day of their arrest. Thompson found himself at Walton Lane Police Station, while Venables was taken to Liverpool's Lower Lane Police Station. Both boys underwent the process of providing blood, hair, and fingernail samples. With this process, the police ventured into uncharted territory regarding both questions and investigations. Since no one had ever interviewed potential child murder suspects before, many of their tactics are tailored to adults and how their psychology works. But with children, everything is different. And it left investigators stumped as to how they should really approach the situation.
Well, yeah, because you're almost thinking, too, you probably have to have like parents' consent on so much too. I wouldn't even know how that would work actually. Yeah,
well, I mean, there's certain things like that. I don't think consent really matters because, I mean, this is an investigation, potential murder. Like rights only go so far no matter what your age is, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're a murder suspect, it's not like, well, you can't talk to my child. It's my child. I'll discipline him as I want. I mean, that's not how it's going to go on a murder investigation, right?
I guess. So, but yeah, just the thought of them taking your kid though, you know?
Yeah, no, fair enough. But I mean, that goes with adults. Hey, that's my 28-year-old boy. Like you can't take him. He's innocent. Yeah, sure he is, grandma. So it's the same sort of situation. Rights only go so far when you commit a crime. Mm-hmm. So
very true.
But one thing that they really needed to do though, and this was the biggest part of it, whatever they did, they needed to ensure that it was clear that the boys comprehended the gravity of their statements to police. And they understood the distinctions between truth and falsehood, you know, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. That was the biggest thing, ensuring that they understand this. Like adults understand this concept rather easily. Of course, aside from like someone struggling with mental health or other issues that prevent certain cognitive understandings. But children, on the other hand, don't necessarily know this so much.
Right. They're still learning it.
Their brains are still developing, right? So this was the first and foremost thing that officers needed to ensure that occurred. They began by administering very specific questions that were designed to ascertain if these boys did in fact understand the important piece of the puzzle. Like Do you understand how significant this is? Do you understand right, wrong, all of that? Now, both boys passed this questioning, and it paved the way for the interrogation to finally begin. Accompanied by their mothers and legal representation, both boys faced the police questioning with varying degrees of composure. Venables displayed his youth with hysterical and was gripped quite a bit by fear, understandably. You're being interrogated by officers for potential murder, right? And he was expressing like a lot of fear about the prospect of going to jail. So, I mean, I understand that, like, that he's 10.
Well, yeah, because I'm just thinking, if they did do something bad, would a 10-year-old really be able to keep, would they really, you know, hide it or hold it in?
Well, in contrast, Thompson remained controlled and composed through the whole ordeal.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Oh.
Which is very surprising and almost scary for someone of that age.
Kind of is scary, yeah.
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 I mean, many adults struggle through this sort of stuff. I've seen many adults in interrogation videos lose their composure and lose it rather fast, too. Where in this situation, no, he held himself together.
Okay. That is a bit alarming to me.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
So during the interviews, Venables admitted to being in the vicinity on the day that James disappeared, but omitted any mention of the Strand Shopping Center, which is where he went missing and the footage was taken from. Eventually, though, Thompson disclosed their presence at that shopping mall and provided authorities with detailed descriptions of James's attire.
Oh.
So there was a detailed description that was released by James's mother trying, you know, like missing child. Oh, here's what he's wearing, right?
Yeah.
However, police were very taken aback by his intimate knowledge of James's clothing. Like, I don't know to what details he was able to give, but much more than what was released to the public.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This was an extremely significant piece, and it suggested prolonged contact with James.
Mm-hmm.
So before long, Thompson would ultimately confess that he and Venables had indeed taken James Bulger away from the shopping center. They were the two individuals seen on that CCTV footage leading him away.
And Thompson was the one that was hysterical too, right? You said?
Hold on. I got to double check. No, Venables was. Thompson was the one who remained calm, cool, collective.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
So the truth basically, though, was now beginning to come out. And it didn't take long for the two boys to begin to actually turn on each other and start playing the blame game a bit. They were each shifting responsibility onto the other and obscuring the facts and what their involvement really was. Now, Thompson's testimony underwent five distinct alterations over the course of 2 days of relentless questioning. However, it was a seemingly innocuous question from Venables about if you can recover fingerprints off skin, that set a very significant alarm bell for investigators.
That is a question and a half, hey?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that would make it, I feel like if you were in this scenario and you were the kid asked that, like that would just make the like hairs on the back of your neck stand up.
100%.
Like, why the fuck is he asking it?
Exactly.
That?
Like he's asked, like he knows something, he's hiding something. There's crucial information that's going on here. Why is he gonna ask, can you recover fingerprints off someone's skin?
Yeah, because he may not know that he could have just Googled that at home.
Yeah.
Just kidding. I'm kidding. That's a terrible joke.
Yeah.
That is very alarming.
Your joke or what he said?
No. The question.
How about both? No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Anyways, so as the interrogation went on, the police began to notice a troubling pattern in Thompson's behavior. Whenever James was mentioned, his anxiety seemed to manifest in subtle physical cues, such as shuffling his legs a bit more. So it seemed, you know, just the mention of James's name, it made him very uncomfortable or nervous, almost as if bringing up some vivid memories or potentially even PTSD. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So there's some alarming red flags going off with both these boys. By lunchtime on February 19th, Thompson finally confessed that the two of them indeed made their way to the railway tracks with James. It was a moment that I am sure investigators will never forget, because in this instance, Thompson even impersonated James pleading and crying for his mother as they brought him to the tracks.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Gosh. Oh, okay.
I cannot imagine being in the room watching this 10-year-old imitate a 2-year-old child.
Who's terrified and just wants his mom.
Screaming for his mom. And you know that some bloody shit happened next.
It would be so mind blowing. It would be a case that's just once in a, you know, a blue. Like it would never happen again.
I really hope it fucking won't. That's for sure. So yeah, it was an impersonation that was so disturbing. Authorities, it sends shivers down their spines, and it's like doing the same for me. So I totally understand. And meanwhile, nearing 1 p.m., Venables found himself alone with his parents in the interrogation room. And reaching a breaking point under the weight of guilt, he actually tearfully confessed to his involvement in James's murder. They were unaware that police were tentatively listening to every word. You're in an interrogation room. When will people understand you're not alone?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I get that the boy wouldn't understand.
Yeah,
that,
for sure.
But the parents, hey?
Yeah. So he admitted fully to his involvement in James's murder.
But maybe the parents would have, you know, later confessed that.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying they wouldn't, but it's just there's so many cases out there when it's like people are like acting different or talking different when the police are not in the room. It's just like you are in a station, you are being monitored.
Yeah.
I don't care if you cannot see the equipment, it is there.
But just there's just that thing about being in a closed room and a closed door, you know?
Yeah.
That you just think you're safe in a way.
Oh, 100%. And police use that to their advantage. Guaranteed. Yeah. Guaranteed. Yeah. So it was with this revelation that the authorities were able to confront Thompson, because it was Venables who, you know, was the one who said this. They go over to Thompson. And despite his steadfast denial of guilt in James's death, the police believed they now had amassed sufficient evidence against both of them. So even though they brought this to Thompson, he's like, yeah, I don't know. You know, well, I didn't do it. I don't know what he's talking about. They're like, yeah, okay, sure. We still have enough evidence. We're going for this.
Still just holding strong.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the two boys they initially thought could have not been the ones to do this horrific crime, now they had enough evidence to indeed confirm they were responsible. And on Saturday, February 20th, 1993, the boys were officially and formally charged with the abduction and murder of James Bulger, who, let me once again repeat it, he was 2 and Thompson and Venables were 10.
Wow. I mean, you feel sick about all of it, but like, I almost feel them being 10 takes away from James's death, you know? But really, that is like the main thing, the main, it's all sad, but that's the main brutal outcome of this, right? Oh, it
100% is.
Yeah.
If anything, I honestly think the fact that they are 10 makes it worse to me, because it's like, how can these two 10-year-olds
even think of doing something like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
So don't get me wrong. Like, my heart is fucking broken for James, but it breaks even more to think that his life was taken by 2 10-year-olds, because at that age, you're supposed to be innocent.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to, like, you know.
Yeah, you're supposed to be like playing, you know, making forts in the woods and shit.
Yeah. And so one innocent life was taken by 2 other supposedly innocent lives, which makes it all the worse.
It does. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is, like, just because they're 10, I don't want to. It almost seems like it takes away from what happened to poor little James. And
yeah. Well, we haven't even really got into what actually happened to James
yet. Oh, are we going to get into that?
A bit, yes.
Okay.
We will. Bear with me here. We're getting into the trial. So during their initial appearance, around 500 protesters formed as an angry mob and gathered outside the courtroom. I mean, underscoring the immense controversy and high tempers, you know, surrounding this whole case. And the intensity of public outrage even targeted the parents of the accused. And as a result, they had to relocate to different parts of the country and were provided with new identities under the Witness Protection Program due to death threats from vigilantes.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, it's not unexpected from what they did to that other boy, right?
Yeah. So basically, yeah, they're like, they're blaming the parents, right? Because they're 10.
They're 10, yeah.
Like, you raised this, you did this. Like, what the fuck? So, yeah. Now, the trial commenced on November 1st, 1993, and was conducted as an adult trial despite the boy's young age now at the time being 11 years old as they walked the courtroom.
I was wondering how they're going to deal with this.
Yes, they conducted it as an adult trial. Both Thompson and Venables denied the charges of murder, abduction, and attempted abduction. So the attempted abduction charge came from a related incident, that very same day at the very same shopping center, because Thompson and Venables had attempted to lead away another two-year-old boy, but were thwarted by the boy's mother.
Seriously?
Yes. So they tried once, were unsuccessful, and tried again, and got James.
Oh, gosh.
And who knows, they potentially could have tried with others, but were not caught or successful as well.
Wow.
Yes. So this was very clearly premeditated.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Seated in full view of the court on raised chairs, so both boys could actually see.
You're kidding.
They were accompanied by two social workers and guards as the story unfolded. As it went, Thompson and Venables had set out with the intention of abducting a young boy, ultimately targeting James. They led him to the nearby train tracks, where they callously beat him and laid him down on the tracks before weighing his head down with rubble, hoping to stage his death as an accident on the train tracks. Tragically, James's body was severed by a passing train after they left the scene. His dismembered remains were eventually discovered by a group of children 2 days later. During the trial, a forensic pathologist provided crucial testimony, affirming that James had died before being struck by the train. This revelation added a very chilling layer of what could have transpired before the train even arrived and the, you know, already horrifying narrative.
I mean, I was going to ask that, but I was like, do I also want to know? Oh.
Not really.
Yeah.
If I'm being fair, I kind of omitted searching up much of the details known, but even still, not many of the details are known.
Which is probably a good thing.
Yes.
I mean, for like James and James's family, right?
Yes, definitely. However, I do have some more details regarding it to share with you. Police had also suspected, or they had suspicions of a sexual assault aspect to this. And it was fueled by the fact that James's shoes, socks, pants, and underwear had been removed. The pathologist's report was read out in court, and it revealed an additional very disturbing detail. James's foreskin had also been forcibly been pulled back, which for some young boys may not be a natural thing to occur at such a young age.
Holy shit. Really?
When questioned about this aspect of the attack by detectives and a child psychiatrist named Eileen Vizard, Thompson and Venables did not provide any details.
What the actual fuck? Huh. Okay.
So leading him to the tracks, they assaulted him in many manners, beat him, tortured him, held him down with rubble on the tracks in hopes of staging an accident. After they left, he had died of a result of what they did to him. And then his remains were run over by a train and he was found 2 days later.
And I'm sure that they went back after that to see like what the
potentially,
because
yes.
I'm trying to figure out, like, my brain just going a mile a minute, like, what the fuck they're like, why, like, why the hell are they doing this?
I don't know,
but it has to, like, I feel like it has to be some sort of like curiosity thing, which is beyond disturbing. So I bet you anything that they went back after to like see.
They could have. There is one thing I have in here that may provide some insight to that, but we'll touch on it here in a little bit.
Okay.
So Thompson and Venables were considered by the court to be capable of, quote, mischievous discretion, meaning an ability to act with criminal intent as they were mature enough to understand that they were doing something seriously wrong, mm-hmm. hence, you know, being tried as adults. Thompson was considered to have taken the leading role in the abduction process, though it was Venables who had apparently initiated the idea of taking James to the railway track. Venables later described the heartbreaking part of the story on how James seemed to like him and trust him, holding his hand and allowing him to even pick him up on the wandering journey to the tracks, which would ultimately become his own murder scene.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I just can't get rid of these fucking visuals in my head.
I know, I know. I can like literally fucking see James yeah. reaching up for his hand.
Like a little 2-year-old baby, really.
Yeah.
Oh.
So the pathologist spent 33 minutes in the courtroom outlining the injuries sustained by James, including extensive brain damage and hemorrhaging. There were also many injuries to his legs, which had been inflicted after he was stripped from the waist down. It seems as though before the two boys had pinned him down to be run over by the train, that's when, you know, of course, we had already mentioned beating, abuse, torture had occurred. There was also a lot of evidence to suggest that much of this, you know, we just don't know the true extent.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't.
Well, yeah.
So as a result of the trial, the two boys were found guilty of James Bulger's murder at the Preston Court on the 24th of November in 1993, becoming the youngest convicted murderers of the 20th century.
Oh, you know, and the mom was probably sitting in there, right?
Yes. Yes, which she was.
Is, I mean, like, we're here listening about this and like, you know, it's so disturbing, but I just can't even imagine being that boy's mom.
Can you imagine learning the stuff that that child went through, mm-hmm. that your child
your
went
little
through?
Boy. Yeah.
And it is 100% not her fault, because you can never, because you can never have 100% attention on your child. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And I know someone in her situation would have these tendencies to blame themselves. I know, because it's a natural instinct. Well, if only I watched, 100% not her fault. Definitely not. These two fucking douche canoes of children were watching for the moment yeah. she fucking looked away.
They were there on a mission,
they
right?
They were. And she could have watched in that moment. They would have struck at another moment.
Well, and the thing is, too, they would have gotten away kind of with it a little bit easier, because I don't even think anyone would see this little boy with these two 10-year-olds and any alarms would go off, because they're probably thinking like, oh, it's their siblings or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because if it was reversed and it was adults with this little boy, you know, some people might notice or like see that they were upset a little bit more, but not with two 10-year-olds.
Well, there was even a situation, I kind of omitted this one, but I told you they were kind of headed out of the mall to the canal sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
There was apparently a woman who had witnessed the two boys with James, and James had tripped or fallen or they pushed him or something, and he was crying, and she didn't report this. Who's going to think to that's probably their little brother, right?
Yeah. Like, or cousin or something.
Yeah, yeah. The mom will take care of that. Like they're right there. They're fine.
Yeah.
So
your mind would never, ever go to
not
that.
In a million motherfucking years.
No,
never.
No.
So judge, Mr. Justice Moreland, love the fucking name for a judge, mm-hmm. Mr. Justice Moreland, told Thompson and Venables that they had committed a crime of quote, unparalleled evil and barbarity. In my judgment, your conduct was both cunning and very wicked. So Judge Moreland sentenced them to be determined by Her Majesty's pleasure. I'm not exactly certain what that means. I'm pretty sure that's going to like the queen of, because they're in England, right? Mm-hmm. So it's probably going to, you know, the monarch of some sort, with a recommendation that they should be kept in custody for, quote, very, very many years to come, recommending a minimum term of 8 years.
Oh, gosh, because I hadn't even thought about that. They're so fucking young.
Yes. They're being They're being tried as adults in an adult courtroom, but they are still children. You cannot sentence them like an adult. You cannot.
Oh, my gosh. They're probably already out.
Well, there was some discrepancies in how to actually come down with justice on a serving term. And there it went up, I think, to one point with the recommendation of being minimum of like 12 years, but eventually, like through like controversies and debates and stuff, it came back down to the original 8. But of course, there is a lot of controversy surrounding this case because of the young age of these kids and how this court proceeding played out.
Well, yeah. They did a very like adult task, really, though.
They did.
Like, I mean, they should be tried that way if they're going to do something that bad.
Well, I mean, honestly, not even a fucking adult should do that. But yeah, no. I know what you mean, 100%. Yeah. But at the closing of this trial, the judge lifted reporting restrictions and allowed the names of the killers to be released, saying, and this goes along the whole lines of the controversy thing, but I 100% agree with the judge, saying this, quote, "I did this because the public interest overrode the interest of the defendants. There was a need for an informed public debate on crimes committed by young children." So he's using this as an educational platform for not only the judicial system, but also the public as well, which phenomenal. I love that.
Yeah. No, that's really good.
Yeah. And yeah, he was right, though. For years, this case has been a very hot topic of debate regarding how everything unfolded. And yeah, I kind of already said that. So now on June 22nd of 2001, having served their 8 years, both Thompson and Venables were released. Both were given new identities and moved to different parts of the country to maintain their own safety.
Holy fuck.
An injunction prevents the press from publishing any details about the two killers' new lives. On the 23rd of July, 2010, Venables, age 27, was jailed once again after admitting his guilt to downloading and distributing indecent images of children. So, child pornography. And I said there's a piece that may paint some insight onto why. There it is.
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Holy shit. And they're just fucking out of jail now? Well, they're going to... Oh, so...
You good?
No.
I told you this is a fucking rough case.
Because that's the problem. They're so young, so they're going to get out. And they're clearly, especially, I don't know about the other boy, but he definitely did not get rehabilitated.
Yeah.
And they're just going to being like a complete garbage bag of a human.
Yeah.
Awesome. And we don't even get to know who the fuck they are.
Correct.
That is just not okay.
I somewhat agree, but I somewhat don't agree. Like, I see it, but I don't know if I agree with it. I understand, but fuck, it's hard. Like, I don't know. I see both sides of this coin. I really fucking do. And it's so hard to discern which would be the better side. Because, I mean, these two kids did a fucking horrible thing. Yes, they did a very, as you put it, like a very adult act, right?
Yeah.
But they were kids. If anyone's going to be rehabilitated, it's someone like this.
That's true. But clearly the one especially did not.
Correct. So how do you discern that? You have to take a risk at some point with letting them potentially, like, I don't know. And I don't know what that risk would be. I'm not educated enough. I'm not someone in the position of power to make that call.
Well, I mean, you'd only hope too that there was some sort of like something that followed their new names that made it so they couldn't work with kids or something.
Oh, yeah. No, there definitely should be some fucking lines in the sand. Yeah. I agree 100%. You don't just be like, yeah, enjoy your new fucking life under a new identity.
And they become like a teacher or something, you know?
Yeah, no. You're going to be fucking working very far away from kids. We're going to be checking up on you every so often. And
well, you would only hope, you don't know for sure.
But that, I mean, we could go fucking many episodes onto how the fuck that could play out. I see why they were charged and I see why they served an 8-year sentence. I see why they were given new names. I see why they were given out to live a new life. But I see why people are very mad about it. Mm-hmm. I see why they shouldn't. I see it all. I do. And you can't have the best of both worlds. You just cannot.
I do. Okay. I think if they were given a little bit more time than 8 years, it would be easier to swallow. Like, it would be easier for knowing that they get a new name. Because 8 years isn't really that long.
No, it's not.
For someone to, you know, like get rehabilitated. So I feel like if they would have gotten, you know, a normal kind of sentence, like even 25 years, say, right? Like kind of the normal.
Fair enough.
That after that amount of time, you know, maybe they could be changed. Yeah. But 8 years, I can't really see it.
There's so many factors to consider in this. But anyways, on to Thompson, though. Since his release in 2001, he has kept a very low profile and has done his best to maintain his anonymity. There we go. He came close to one incident, actually meeting James's mother, Denise, in 2004. She sought him out and she managed to track him down.
Oh.
However, she was paralyzed with anger and hatred and was unable to confront him. Unable to confront one of the men who murdered her two-year-old child, James Bulger.
Oh, that's really sad because that just sort of shows like her life going forward, you know?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't seem like it's good. How would it really be though?
Yeah.
Oh, that is so sad.
So the sheer brutality of the sadistic killing perpetrated by Thompson and Venables has surpassed any expectations of what two primary school children, because that's what they were, could ever be capable of. The word evil has since become synonymous with their actions and their names. That is the story of the murder of James Bulger.
Wow. That is a brutal story.
Yeah, not one that I enjoyed researching.
No, gosh, I don't even know if I would have been able to research that one. Gosh, that is horrible. Horrible. And I'm still literally on the fact that they were only 18 when they got out. That is still kind of a child in a sense. They still have so much learning and stuff. Yeah. They needed to be in way longer than that, in my opinion.
Well, technically, they probably would have been 19 because they were 11. But I don't know. It all depends on like when the months fell and, you know, but so, yeah, there could have been time served from being in custody. Who knows what?
Yeah. Gosh. And there's, like you said, so much that we probably don't even know or never will know. I actually am surprised. How would they even go on? Like just knowing what they did is
I don't know. I really don't. One of them clearly has some very disturbing tendencies to then come out of prison and have child pornography. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to have that conversation. Never mind. How are you doing?
I don't know. I mean, I knew a little bit about this case. I didn't know a lot of the details. But yeah. It is just so it's so devastating. It's just it's just so unnecessary and such a waste. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, I will end it on one little note. James's parents, after James was killed, they had another child together and I believe it was his middle name was James.
Oh man.
So they did name their other son after their older brother.
I was wondering that. I almost asked, but you almost think like, gosh, the anxiety they must have, you know, towards this other kid too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Gosh, because how do you even go forward after you've kind of lost two? Like you would be worried sick. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you already are, but even to more of an extent.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. Well, it's late. We're probably going to go to bed now and probably not get any sleep. That's most likely our night. So hopefully you somewhat enjoyed this episode. It was a very heavy one.
Yeah.
It was one of those ones that we had to do. We had to tell James's story.
Yeah.
And it sat on our shelf for a long time with that daunting task of covering it.
Mm-hmm. It does get recommended a lot, this one.
It does.
And then I just wanted to say, too, just because we are on the road, we aren't videoing this one.
Oh, right. Yeah. So this one will not be on YouTube. This is a strictly audio one.
Yeah.
And we're a little bit behind with posting some video podcasting. So those will be going up here in the coming week or so. So just watch out for those. Go down in the description. You can find YouTube. You can find Instagram. We have two YouTube channels. One where you can watch the podcast in video form, except like Nicole said, not this one. And another where we do vlogs and stuff about our lifestyle. There's also Patreon. We have a website. It's all there. If you want to sign up, check any of it out. All the descriptions are down below.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to have something like a ice cream or something. Some sort of a little something to make your night a little better.
I think I just need to like walk out into the middle of a field somewhere and just scream.
Just scream at the top of your lungs.
Scream at nothing and everything all at once.
At this world.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, well done.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to go do that.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
Yeah. And until next time.
Stay wicked.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.